the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site. And this edition of the show. I'm not going to number these episodes over the next few times because I don't know what order they will get published. We are in the opponent preview series that we like to do every single year, where I bring on a writer that covers the Cardinals' opponents, each of those 14 opponents during the season. And in this edition of the show, we are focusing on one of the Cardinals' NFC West rivals, the Seattle Seahawks. And joining me for I don't know how many times, he's done this several times, he's covered a lot of teams, whether it was the Panthers, the Seahawks. Now, technically, he is the former site editor of SeahawksWire.com. He jumped ship without telling me before today. Heading over to Sporting News to cover the Houston Texans. It's Tim Weaver, a man who is multi-talented in terms of the teams that he's covered. How many teams does that make it now that you've covered over the years?
I think it's 9 or 10. Let me see. We started out. We got Seahawks, Eagles, Bears, Steelers, Panthers, Falcons, Seahawks again, Texans. So I guess 8.
Oh, man. That's a lot. I have covered the Cardinals. I covered other local stuff here back in my days for running the regional Arizona sports page for SB Nation. But, no, NFL, cover the Cardinals. And so welcome back. You've done this, I don't know how many years in a row it's been, joining me on the preview show. The Cardinals will face the Seahawks twice. In fact, they will face them twice in 3 weeks, in week 12 after their bye, and then again in week 14. It's very interesting because the Cardinals, the other division opponents, are spread out. They play the Rams in week 2, and then in week 17. The 49ers, they play, I think, in week 5 or 6, and then in week 18. And then the Seahawks, we'll do 2 and 3 weeks. Later in the year, which is interesting because the Seahawks have underwent some changes. Now, what we'll talk about, we want to start with last year. Obviously, when we get to the offseason, it's an offseason of change. Coming off of their playoff appearance the year before, they went into this year, didn't do poorly, but finished 9-8. If you look back on the 2023 season for the Seahawks, what would you rate it? Like, what were the successes? What were the disappointments? And ultimately, how did the season match up with expectations?
Overall, I'd say they fell just a little short of expectations. If you force me to give him a grade, I'd probably go with a B- or C+, somewhere in between those two. It's a really talented group. It's mostly young. There are a few key veterans. Geno Smith's still there. They lost Bobby Wagner. But like a good mix of youth and experience, and they look good in most units, or at least not a liability, except the offensive line, which is always terrible. But I really thought they would win 11 games. I thought they would at least give the Niners a run for the money and not get blown out again. So they did fall a little bit short overall of my expectations. I think it was, and obviously the organization agreed, I think it was the fact that they just didn't live up to their potential. They just needed another voice in there, somebody to break through and like get out of this rut that they've been in. I wrote an article early in the season. This is the 6th straight year that they've had a below average defense. And that's a problem anytime, but especially when your head coach is a defensive genius and an all-time great defensive coach. Like, something's wrong there. Like, if it happens 1-2 seasons, you know, that happens. But, like, he had plenty of time to restock that defense after the Legion of Boom left, and it just wasn't able to do it. They were never able to get back, even to, like, an average level. Even being a mediocre defense would have been a step up most of those years. So they did have to make a big change at the top. That's what they did, bringing in Mike Donald.
And you know, kind of the point in the season that kind of things fell apart were the 4 straight losses from week 11 to week 14, where they lost to the Rams, the 49ers, the Cowboys, and then the 49ers again. And it kind of basically basically kind of did in their season in terms of the hopes, losing those three divisional games that were any hopes of the postseason. Last season, you had a couple of good games in terms of run defense, but the run defense seemed to be the problem, even with the addition of Leonard Williams late mid-season. They gave up over the last 7 weeks of this year, 169, 136, 173, 178, 162, 202, and 206 to the Cardinals. And I guess you could say that the Cardinals, I mean, they went 9-8, but they were lucky to go 9-8 because the Cardinals, and for us, for draft ranking, Matt Prater missing that field goal was a blessing because it means Marvin Harrison. But yeah, and that was a game where James Conner absolutely just terrorized them. But the Cardinals defense was, you know, even worse than the Seahawks. So yeah. What would you say overall? You talk about the defense. Was that the overarching thing, was the lack of a physical run defense?
I mean, that was why they've lost several close games the last 2 years. It wasn't just last year. Like, they started out well in 2023. They made it a big deal, like, we're going to fix the run D. That was their whole thing this offseason. We're going to get that run defense down. And for a few weeks, it looked like they had it. They were really good against the run up until, like, week 5, 6, and it dropped down and dropped down. And it just kept getting worse and worse as the season went along. And I don't know what adjustments they tried to make, but they didn't work. You know, after a certain point, you know, one guy misses a tackle, two guys misses a tackle. If all your guys are missing tackles and you're consistently struggling against the run, it's a coaching problem. So they wound up finishing, I believe, 30th against the run as far as rushing yards allowed for the second straight year. So that was definitely a big part. You know, you can't blame Leonard Williams was playing his ass off. Like, he was drawing double teams. He was doing everything he could. But it was a systemic problem against the run that had lasted for more than just a season and a half. It was a recurring problem. So that was one issue, I think. I imagine in that meeting when Jody Allen and John Schneider sat down with Pete Carroll, they said, like, look, this is something, you're a defensive genius, but this has been a problem for several years now, and we've given you the tools you said you needed. They gave up big. I didn't like the Leonard Williams trade itself. Like, I think it was the right idea to keep him now that you have him on your roster. And he played very, very well for them in the second half of the season, but it was a bad trade. They gave up two picks and they wound up just immediately going on a 6-game losing streak. It did not work out well. They went all in and immediately just got blown out. It was not a good way. And I think that may have, the way that went down may have been the last straw for them. There have been other bad trades.
Game, wasn't it? They got him and then they get boat raced 37-3.
That was the game that kind of broke their spirit.
And they gave up nearly 300 rushing yards.
Yeah, that was the game where ever since then, I think that just kind of broke their spirit as far as tackling and stopping their run. Like, you could see after that, they weren't the same. They just got, like, completely demoralized by Baltimore in the trenches.
Yeah, and then they owned the only game that they won in that 6-game stretch was a 3-point win over the Commanders, who were, you know, awful. Geno Smith, obviously a couple of years ago when he took over for Russell Wilson, he started out gangbusters playing at MVP level, then kind of leveled off late in the season. What would you say his play was last year? He technically was a Pro Bowler. he did go to the Pro Bowl games, I guess is what it's called now. Efficient, you know, nearly 65% of his passes completed, 20 touchdowns, only 9 interceptions, a 92.1 passer rating. What would you say about Geno Smith's play last season?
I really liked his play. I know a lot of people will look at the raw numbers, like just 20 touchdown passes, 11 interceptions. Like I said, wrote yesterday, that's not going to win you a lot of fantasy league championships. He's not a fantasy star. He's probably not going to be. He would have been at this point in his career. But as far as actual quarterbacking play, he did really, really well in a lot of ways. He was the best deep ball thrower, or at least most prolific deep ball thrower, for the second year in a row. I know his numbers were down. Like, he had 30 touchdowns in 2022, but that coincides with the rest league. You know, everyone's running these two safety sets now, so nobody can take the top off. Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen ruined it for everybody. So now everybody's got to try to dink and dunk a little bit more. So that's normal. Like I wouldn't be worried about his numbers at all. He's extremely accurate. He got much better. He had no choice, really. He got much better at avoiding sacks. I think only Mahomes had a better pressure to sack ratio. He was just brilliant escaping, constantly having to run for his life and getting the ball off and making good reads. I think the Dallas game was just that was one of the best quarterbacking games I've ever seen, because their pass rush was just all over him. He had no time to throw, and just it's like he could see everything coming. He released his balls. Just the overall the competence that he had, the ice in his veins, it was extremely impressive considering the situation he was under. That made me a believer. I saw that. I said, he's not going to play like this every week. Obviously, it was the best game of his career, but like he's playing like a top five quarterback right now. He's capable of reaching that level. So he really made me a believer. And like, I'm okay with them keeping him for like the time being. I know he's 33 years old now, but he's not like Matt Stafford was when he was 33, when he'd been in a car wreck every week because the Lions couldn't protect him for 10 years. Like he spent from 2015 to 2021, he was on the sidelines. His body wasn't taking that punishment. So like, he's not really like a 10-year veteran. His body is fresher, and you can see he moves really well for a quarterback that age. So I'm happy with him keeping him for now, as long as, you know, his contract is a good value. You can make a case next year, because if they cut him, they save $25 million cap room, which is pretty good. That's a lot of savings, but it's also going to be a big dead money hit. And who are you going to find that's a better value there? Like, there's not many if you're not on their rookie contract. He's a really good value right now, and he's playing the hell out of that position.
Some of the young players from last year, Ken Walker, 905 yards. Rookie Zach Charbonnet, 462 rushing yards. You have Jackson Smith and Jigba added to the mix, 63 catches, 628 yards and a touchdown. Add to that, you've got your young defensive players. You've got Devin Witherspoon. You have Reek Woolen. He didn't do as well in year two as he did in year one. But what did you think about the young players on the roster a season ago?
I love Devin Witherspoon. I haven't been this excited about a Seahawks rookie probably since Metcalf. And it's not like Metcalf, you could see where it was going to go just because of his obscene athleticism, having that size and explosiveness in that package that he does. Witherspoon, it's just, yes, he's fast. Yes, he's lanky like these Seahawks corners always tend to be, but he's just mean. He's just, I describe him as a mean little gremlin in the slot. He just loves to hit people. Not the way most cornerbacks aren't like that. You know, there are a few. But there's not many cornerbacks who are that physical. He loves to blitz from that spot. He loves to hit runners. Just very impressed by him overall. He had a bad game against the Steelers late in the season. Everyone was bad in that game. Nobody could tackle. Particularly bad game from him. But you saw he bounced back in that finale against Arizona. That's what I really look for. Like, how do you respond? Everyone has a bad game. But how do you bounce back after that bad game? How do you respond? I remember growing up here in Chicago, like Michael had a bad game or if the Bulls lost, the next opponent was screwed. They had no chance. You might as well pack it in, because 99.8% of those games Jordan was going to win because he was angry. That's what it felt like. That's what I was looking for him, because he didn't have any. He only had one or two rough games as a rookie, but he bounced back very well from them. Woolen, I really like as well. He definitely dropped off a bit in run defense. For someone his size, I'd really like to see him stick his nose in the morning. He's 6'4". He's faster than all these guys. There's no reason why he shouldn't be a very good tackler. So I'd like to see him improve in that under McDonald, but still very good in coverage, still tough to throw against, very, very lethal in man coverage. He struggled in zone, which is mostly what they played, so that was partially a problem. The very, very good lockdown one-on-one kind of guy. And those two, that's kind of like your foundation. You got Leonard Williams and now the rookie Byron Murphy up front, and then those two on the back end. That's what they're going to build around these next few years.
Coming up next on the Rest of Sierra podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's talk about the offseason, coaching changes, losses, gains, free agency in the draft. That's coming up next on the Rest of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Mr. Star of Cardinals Talk on the web. Lots of things happen in the offseason. Obviously, the most notable change was the change in leadership. What would you call what happened with Pete Carroll? Was it a firing? Was it a How does that go down exactly? And then what do you think of the new guy, Mike McDonald?
Well, they would say that it was like a mutual decision. Like they said, Pete Carroll was going to stay on in a quote-unquote advisory role. So that's what I thought. I thought that was a good idea. I'm like, you don't want to totally throw out the Pete Carroll era. There are good things that he built here, like the culture, you want to keep that. There are certain things you just don't want to change. Like, that's not broken. Don't fix it. But they did need a change, I think, schematically. Even though he gave his coordinators a lot of freedom, they were calling their own things. It did not keep up with the trends around the NFL. The biggest one I'd point to, pre-snap disguises. He just didn't do it. Just didn't care. Like, here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm showing. That's something that was a holdover from this. You had Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman there. Like, we're going to play cover one or cover three. And, you know, what are you going to do about it? But they don't have those players anymore. And they didn't keep up with the trends of the NFL. On the other side of the ball, I'd say fourth down was another thing that you just way, way behind it. The Steelers game was the worst. I think that was probably what convinced Jody Allen to move on from him. Fact that they punted twice on fourth and one, and like it wasn't deep in their own territory or anything. We're talking around midfield, fourth and one, critical game, punted both times. Meanwhile, the Steelers, you know, one of the most conservative teams in the league, they know better. Mike Tomlin knows better. He's adjusted over time to know that. They went for two fourth and ones with QB sneaks. Very, what is it, like 80% success rate, 85%? Everyone knows QB sneaks work. Pete Carroll refused to run them. Those two plays worked out for Pittsburgh. Seattle punched it twice. That's the game right there. That's the whole game. And that happened over and over and over again and just got very frustrating from being, I don't consider myself purely a nerd kind of fan. Like, I believe in math. I believe in analytics. But, like, I understand, you know, you want to run the ball. You want to be physical. You want to set the tone. You want to play a certain kind of game. But you have to look at those numbers and say there's no way to justify not going for on fourth and short like that when you're near midfield. There's no way to do it. So they needed to make a change, and they did.
And then moving to Mike McDonald, what have been the early reviews for the new head coach, who was, you know, his time as Baltimore's defensive coordinator was impressive. How do things look so far? Obviously, we haven't seen football on the field, but in philosophy, things that he says, what does he look like as a head coach?
Well, obviously, they're not going to say bad things about their new boss, but players have all responded really well. Like, whenever they're asked about this, they say they love his defense. They're buying in. Devin Witherspoon describes his coaching style as kind of nerdy in a good way, and I was very encouraged by that. Like, this is someone who, like, understands the modern nuances. Like, here's what the numbers say, and here's, you know, how you have to confuse modern quarterbacks. You can't just go out and keep running the same thing and do it by, it seemed like at times Carroll relied on the motivation more so than the X's and O's. Not to say he's a bad X's and O's coach, but like too much of it was like, we're just going to get hyped up there. We're going to chew our gum really hard. We're going to go out there. We're going to play harder than you and beat you. But like, you have to be smarter than that now. And that's really what I expect more than anything. It's going to be a smarter defense. He knows how disguise coverages. Ravens, they were brutal on any inexperienced quarterback. Like, the 49ers offense was an absolute unstoppable juggernaut. They had won, like, I don't know, 20 regular season games in a row, and they played Baltimore, and they just got completely shut down. Brock Purdy looked like a child. Well, he often looks like a child anyway, but especially against that defense. I don't get the Brock Purdy thing. I refuse to play along. He's not good. He's not going to be good. There's nothing. I don't see anything really promising about him, but that's another story. The Ravens, they absolutely thrashed the best offense in the league there. I mean, they couldn't beat the Chiefs, but like nobody can. If anybody's going to win the Super Bowl, aside from Mahomes in the next few years, it'll be the Ravens. But losing McDonald is going to hurt. Like, he had so many players playing their best ball. Like, Kyle Hamilton was going to be great anyway, but he got him playing at an all-pro level. You can say he's probably the best safety in the league right now. McDonald was a part of that. But even older guys, like, on the edge, they had Kyle Van Noy and Jadeveon Clowney. They've both been around, like, 10 years. They both got about 10 sacks. Just like and they were cheap. You know, if you can get cheap pass rushing, I feel like that's a big part of a winning equation now in the league. If you can, you don't have to pay Von Miller tons of money to get sacks through. If you can find a way to manufacture those pressures without paying a ton of money, I think that's a big deal. And that's one thing I'm looking forward to. But he has to stop the run. Like, without that, it's kind of all lost. Like, yes, their pass rush has been lagging for a few years, probably since they traded Michael Bennett. I never liked that trade. But they haven't been a dominant pass rush since he left, and they really need to get back to that. But it's all meaningless if they don't improve against the run. But I trust him to do that much at least.
So they brought back Leonard Williams. They lose. They completely are remaking the safety room, the linebacker room. They released Jamal Adams. That ended up being an awful trade over the years. They released Quandre Diggs. Bobby Wagner left in free agency. Devin Bush left in free agency. Jordan Brooks left in free agency. Damian Lewis leaves in free agency. So does Evan Brown, who signed with the Cardinals. And then they go out and add Jerome Baker and Tyrell Dodson to the linebacker room. They bring in George Fant at tackle, Jonathan Hankins. They trade for Sam Howell, Drew Locke no longer with the team. They add Laken Tomlinson, Kayvon Wallace. What losses are going to be felt the most, and who of the free agency additions are you most excited about?
I think Bobby Wagner is an easy choice as far as losses go, because we just went through this two off seasons ago when he signed with the Rams. That didn't work out very well for them. Signed a 5-year deal, only lasted one, came back. But I would have been happy paying Wagner. It was only $6.5 million, but I understand the impetus to move on from him. But they're most likely going to take a step back at linebacker. He's not the greatest linebacker in the world anymore. He's probably lost half a step, but he's still much, much better than average. He's still the smartest linebacker there is in the game. Maybe Lavonte David. And I wouldn't trust anybody else to run that defense. But who knows? We don't know who's going to be the defensive play caller yet. So I would say Tyrell Dodson, who we know is going to replace him at middle linebacker. We don't know if he's going to be the guy calling plays. That's to be determined. But one free agent I am excited about on that back end there is Rayshon Jenkins, who is probably flying under the radar a bit. He played for Jacksonville. They had a few. I remember him jumping out to me. I was watching them whenever I can see Trevor Lawrence. I'll watch them in the morning. He just jumped out to me. He's really physical. I really liked what he did. It was a different scheme, obviously, but just very physical. He seems to fit they want. And I just love how you can move him all over. That seems to be the key McDonald wants in all these new pieces for that defense. Like, you got to be able to play in the slot. You got to play outside. You can play in the box. You're going to play deep. And that's, to some extent, that's everybody on the back end now in the league. But, like, to be able to do that well and not be a liability at any one of those spots, that's what I'm looking for from Jenkins, for sure.
Is Fant's addition because Abe Lucas, there's real concern about Abe Lucas?
Yes, and legitimately so. This is something that burns me, because they knew about this knee problem that he had at Washington State. It's not a new injury that he has. It's a chronic knee pain thing that Abe Lucas had going back to college. Cost him 11 games last year, and they were just awful. They tried three different right tackles in his place. They had Jason Peters, who's like 42 years old now. They had Stone Forsyth for a few weeks. They tried Jake Curran a few weeks. None of them worked. It was all a dumpster fire on that right tackle spot, and so Geno Smith had to run for his life every other snap. That was really what broke their season more than anything. If they had just gotten average pass protection on the right side there, it probably could have gone a lot better for them. I didn't like the Fant signing. They had to do something.
Yeah.
But I feel like George Fant was kind of...
He's able, at least.
At
center, is Oluwatani going to take over this year, or does Nick Harris project as the starter?
Right now, it looks like it's going to be Oluwatimi. He's been playing with the first string unit, which is all we really have to go on now. You know, you don't know what that'll look like in September. He may look fine now, but then it doesn't go so well in September. It could be either one of those guys. Like, they're not very experienced. That would be one thing if they do sign another free agent before the season, like get an experienced center, just someone with more than like 4 games of starting at center. That would be ideal. Even less than that for Oluwatimi. So that would be one spot I'd look at. But Fant is definitely a desperation move. I would have rather they just actually go get Trent Brown make sure you have that right tackle spot locked down. And if Lucas ends up being healthy, you can figure it out from there. Maybe you slide somebody inside. Maybe you switch them over. You know, you have to make sure that right tackle spot isn't just an absolute liability, because that can sink your whole offense like it did last year.
In the draft, you add Byron Murphy, the second out of Texas. In the first round, Connecticut guard Christian Haynes in round two. Murphy should play right away, should be very good next to Leonard Williams, I imagine you project. But of these guys that the Seahawks drafted, who else do you foresee making an impact this year? You got Christian Haynes, Tyrese Knight, tight end A.J. Barner, cornerback Nehemiah Prickett. Actually, got both the Auburn cornerbacks with Pritchett and D.J. James, adding Sataoa Laumea, and then another offensive tackle, Michael Jarrell. Of those players, who do you expect them to make an impact this year, and who do you like for the future?
This year, Murphy's really the only clear answer that we have. I don't know that any of the rest of them are going to start this year. I hope this is the big X factor for this class. If Christian Haynes, he was their second pick, but it was a third rounder. They had a huge gap between. They took Murphy at 60, and they had to wait until the 80s to get Haynes, and they were lucky he was still there. But if he can't wind up starting at right guard, that kind of stings, because Anthony Branford was really bad the second half of last season. And so far he's been working with the second string units. I was hoping he'd start out a little hotter and they get him going with the starters earlier. I'm hoping at least by midseason he's starting at right guard. If he does, I expect him to do very well. I know the learning curve is rough in the NFL. He may have some bad games. He may have a bad rookie season, but eventually I do expect him to do well. But as far as this year is concerned, Murphy's the only one who can really say he's going to get significant playing time. He's probably going to make a genuine impact for this team right away.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk and Llewellyn, let's move on to what expectations are for 2024. That's coming up next on Rise Up Spirit. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals Talk on the web, talking to Tim Weaver, former Seahawks wire manager over here at the NFL Wire, now covering the Houston Texans for the Sporting News. Looking ahead to 2024, there are mixed thoughts about they feel like, at best, are the third best team in the division right now. Lots of unknowns, got the new head coach, got a whole lot of turnover. Geno Smith returns, and it sounds like just the bits that I've paid attention to the offseason, that Mike McDonald has given confidence to Geno Smith, but hasn't been overly enthusiastic about Geno Smith. I wouldn't be excited about Sam Howell as a prospect to replace him, so you're going to have to go with steady Geno. What kind of are expectations this year? Are fans expecting them to kind of stay on the same track they were? Are they expected to improve over their 9-win season over last season?
Well, this is the toughest thing to call, because like, what is a new head coach worth? Like, how many wins or losses is a new head coach worth? Like, in theory, they're getting a defensive upgrade here at McDonald, and at least as far as their reputation is concerned, a big upgrade at offensive coordinator with Ryan Grubb going from Washington, where he was great with Penix. He's replacing Shane Waldron, who's now in Chicago, who is if you go purely by the numbers, is an average play caller in the NFL. And obviously there's a lot of differences between the two levels and whatnot, but Grubb, arguably one of the best play callers in college football the last couple of years, just really turned that Huskies offense into something entertaining to watch. That USC Washington game was one of the most fun that I've had watching football in the last year, I think. Who knows? They could be terrible. It could not work out at all. It all depends on if they buy in, if they believe in this and they are really motivated to not finish in third place in that division, because it's a really high bar that's set there. Like, they're not going to beat the Niners this year. You're just not. They've won six games in a row, pretty handily.
Niners,
none of them were close.
They're just loaded. They're just loaded on both sides of the ball. The Rams have potential, but only if Stafford's healthy. And then you've got the Cardinals and the Seahawks. Cardinals in year two of their kind of rebuild, where there is optimism, and this year there is uncertainty for the Seahawks. How would you view those games against the Cardinals this year? Are they should wins? Are they we're not sure? Are they considered challenges on their schedule?
I think they should both be wins for Seattle, but I've been saying that for 12 years now, and they're never both win. It's always like, you know, something crazy is going to happen. These games are like probably the hardest to predict of any, like especially the ones in Arizona. It's going to be insane. It's very difficult to project what will happen. I did say take the money line in the week 18 game. I thought like they're going to find a way. It'll be at one point be something crazy like happened against the Eagles, but they should be. It's a much better roster. It's like I get Kyler Murray probably has a higher ceiling than Geno, but aside from Harrison, like who's he going to throw to now? Like I'm going to throw three guys in Harrison and make somebody else beat me. I just think the Cardinals need more help. They need more weapons, and they're not ready to compete with most teams. Like Murray will make them interesting. He'll make sure they can't get blown out most weeks, I think. But there's just a really, really big gap between them and Seattle as far as talent goes. And if McDonald is as good as advertised, those should both be wins for Seattle. Hopefully, I'll be pleasantly surprised if that is the case, though.
What do you think the Seahawks floor and ceiling is in terms for wins this year? What range do you expect to see?
I think the floor is 8-9. It's still, like I said, it's a pretty good roster. They won 9 games 2 years in a row. Aside from losing Wagner, there's no like massive, how are they going to replace what Jamal Adams did? Like, no, that's not a good news.
they'll sign an injured player. That's how they'd replace Jamal Adams.
Yes, that's exactly what they would do. I think 8 wins and then 10 wins is probably their ceiling. I said 11 last year. I'm not willing to be that confident this year just because it usually takes a while for the scheme to, like, get it. And, like, yes, occasionally you have D'Amico Ryans, like, a first-year head coach who has a lot of success. That's really rare. That's 1 in a million that actually happens. Usually it's the second year where you see, things start to click and they catch it. That's what happened with the Ravens defense. Donald was there the last 2 years as a defensive coordinator, and it was like, I believe, like an average, like slightly above average defense in 2022. And then all of a sudden last year, they're the best defense by miles. They're like every single stat, they're dominant. Every stat that matters, they're way ahead of everybody else. So that was very impressive to do that in as short amount of time as he did. So he had like a season and a half. By the time week one started, that was the best defense in the league, and like it wasn't even close. That's a big ask for him to do that twice in a row. Can you make 2 of the best defenses in the league in like 3 years? I don't know if that's possible. But as long as if they get a significant boost, which right now would just be get from really bad to average, if you get that, I would be happy with it. Just have an average defense. Don't have any one part of the game cost you the game. You know, you can't have what happened, I think this was 2 seasons ago, Josh Jacobs just goes right up the middle, runs the ball down their throat in overtime, like a 70-yard touchdown. You can't have that happen, you know, and you can't have a coverage lapse on the back end like there were so many of last year, especially the beginning of the year, the safety room. And that's something that happened every year. The DBs were never on the same page the first 3 weeks of the season under Pete Carroll, and it made no sense to me, but they are there. It always took a month for them to figure things out. Hey, by then you're 1-2, and now you have to win every game for the rest of the year to stay competitive. It's just, it's a hard thing to close out of. So as long as they can get to average this year defensively, I'll be happy. And I expect the offense to be good, despite the offensive line being what it is. I think you just rely on Ryan Grubb being able to call his way around that, even though it was the opposite dynamic at Washington. He had probably the best offensive line in the country. Now he has probably the worst offensive line in the NFL. So that's a pretty big ask for any coordinator to overcome. But you have to hope they're paying him, and like that's what he's asked to do. Hopefully he has a solution for that.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Seahawks podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Our opponent preview show about the Seattle Seahawks with Tim Weaver, former Seahawks Wire managing editor, now covering the Texans for the Sporting News. We'll be back again soon, Tim. I really appreciate the time, as we have every year, and who knows what happened next year. Maybe I'll bring you back up for another preview next year. Hey, Tim, thanks for that. That'll wrap up this edition of the show. We'll be back again soon. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.